sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. On today's show, we're going to be focusing on false flag terrorism. So first, you're going to hear a recent article by 9/11 researcher Kevin Ryan, and then that'll be followed by an audio clip about false flag terrorism. So let's begin with the article. This came out on January 28th, 2018, by Kevin Ryan, and it's called The Terrorism Lottery. And you can find this article on globalresearch.ca or on Kevin Ryan's own personal website called digwithin.net. So here goes. In 1948, The New Yorker published what would become one of the most famous short stories in American literature. This was The Lottery by Shirley Jackson, which told the tale of a community that once every year selected a citizen to be stoned to death in order to ensure a good harvest. Jackson was flooded with hate mail after her story was published. Some readers thought the story represented a real situation, and others were offended that anyone could imagine such a scenario. Although the story was meant to depict only the idea of mindless violence and apathy in human society in the 21st century, it has become a reflection of the general attitude toward terrorism. Consider the crimes of 9/11. As in The Lottery, on a bright summer day, people were selected to die by means of their presence at the World Trade Center, at the Pentagon, and on the hijacked flights. They weren't stoned to death, but they were killed by willful ignorance. That's because much of the public never wanted to know the truth about previous terrorist incidents and simply accepted dubious government accounts. For example, neither the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing nor the tragedy of the USS Cole in October of 2000 have been examined closely by most people. The mindless acceptance of the official account for these events led to the crimes of 9/11, after which the indifference to facts was taken to the next level. What facts were ignored after 9/11? The list would be endless, but here are a few examples. Number one, insider trading related to 9/11 was ignored, and the suspects were not even questioned by the FBI or the 9/11 Commission. Number two, the third skyscraper that fell that day in an obvious demolition event, which was World Trade Center Building 7, was simply not mentioned in the 9/11 Commission report. Number three, eyewitness testimony was hidden from the public for years and later ignored. This included the testimony of firefighters who said that explosives were going off throughout the World Trade Center towers. Number four, building construction codes were not changed as a result of the root causes cited by the government for the destruction of the World Trade Center. Number five, everyone agrees that the public was lied to about the failure of the National Air Defense that day. The question avoided is whether to believe the government's story that the U.S. military lied repeatedly for years to make itself look bad, or the much simpler explanation that the 9/11 Commission lied in its final report to divert attention away from the whole matter. Number six, the government reports on the destruction of the World Trade Center buildings ignored basic laws of science and would have failed peer review. Meanwhile, the only actual peer-reviewed science on the subject, for example, went unheeded. By ignoring the facts related to 9/11, the public has prepared itself to be terrorized on a regular basis. Recurring acts of terrorism follow a formula that is transparent to anyone who cares to examine the evidence beyond simply accepting corporate media reports. An outstanding example is the San Bernardino shooting in December 2015. The Los Angeles Times reported that a year after the San Bernardino shooting, federal officials acknowledged they still don't have answers to some of the critical questions. San Bernardino Police Chief Jared Burguan said, "We never established the motive. The best we can do is theorize." This was a mass shooting in which most of the evidence was ignored in favor of an official account that accused a brown-skinned Muslim husband and his wife. Contrary to the unchallenged accusation, the evidence suggests that the attackers were three white men who appeared to be special operations soldiers. At the time of the attack, a Los Angeles television station stated, quote, police looking for three white males dressed in military gear, unquote. The only eyewitness to the shootings said the perpetrators were three tall, athletic white men in combat-style gear. The witnesses to the getaway said they saw three men in black masks fleeing the scene with rifles in hand. Another said it was three white men in military gear. The attackers got into a black SUV with tinted windows and calmly left the scene. Although a black SUV was later found, shot up badly, no convincing evidence was ever produced showing how the accused were driving or shooting from the SUV. Moreover, the attorney representing the family said the accused appeared to have been handcuffed and lying face down in the vehicle when found. As with 9/11, the accused were conveniently dead. The 14 people killed in San Bernardino were just like the nearly 3,000 killed on 9/11. They were sacrificial lottery winners, murdered not simply by the perpetrators of the crime, but by fellow citizens who continue to ignore the facts about terrorist events. The lack of objective examination of terrorist acts suggests that we might as well stone to death future victims because it is the public's apathy that allows terrorism to continue. Who will be next? As with Shirley Jackson's novel, we are all in the lottery of terrorism. Unless we take action to investigate and communicate the facts about terrorist events, our names will remain in the pool to be selected at random. Only a concerted and persistent effort to question each new terrorist act, as well as those of the last few decades, will remove our names from the list. And now we're going to hear the audio from a video called The 10 Characteristics of a False Flag. And this was produced by TruthStreamMedia.com on October 7th, 2017. And I believe the woman speaking is Melissa Dykes.
For decades now, governments around the world have admitted to committing false flag attacks to further geopolitical and other aims. What's a false flag attack? Simply put, it's a covert operation designed to deceive in such a way that the event is made to appear as if it was carried out by individuals, groups, or nations other than those who actually planned and executed them. Many false flag attacks, including those perpetrated by the American government, have now been exposed, including Operation Northwoods.
From the CIA and other places, secretly create terrorism in the United States. The documents actually said they had a very complex plan where they were going to take an aircraft and load it with CIA people who look like college students, fly it over to have it take off from an airport in Miami with a lot of publicity. And then it would quickly, after it got into the air, land at a secret CIA base. At that same time, an identical plane would take off from that CIA base, except this plane would be empty. And it'd be remotely piloted from the ground. It was a drone plane that would be very similar to the passenger plane that had just taken off. And once the plane was over Cuba, there was going to be a tape recorder that would have played a distress call to a microphone saying, help, we're being shot at. And a few minutes later, once the plane was over the Caribbean Sea after it passed over Cuba, it would have somebody would have pressed a button on the ground, blowing up the plane, and they would have blamed Cuba for killing a plane load of American college students.
The Gulf of Tonkin incident that spurred America's official entrance into the Vietnam War.
The Gulf of Tonkin resolution was not a declaration of war. There never was a declaration of war in Vietnam, but it served much the same purpose. The president was given broad powers to wage war. But what the Congress did not know, what the country did not know, is that the second attack in the Gulf of Tonkin may never have happened.
The FBI's COINTELPRO campaign, which involved the use of provocateurs to carry out violent acts and falsely blame them on political activists from the 1950s to the 1970s, to the anthrax letters that began showing up in the mail in the wake of 9/11, ending in the death of Sun photo editor Robert Stevens. The Bush administration tried to pressure then-FBI Director Robert Mueller to publicly blame the letters on bin Laden, despite the fact that it was well known the anthrax was a military strain, and even the FBI couldn't come up with a halfway plausible story of how guys in caves with box cutters could supposedly wind up in possession of weapons-grade anthrax. But what about all the false flags that the government hasn't admitted to yet? In light of Las Vegas, people have been asking, how do you know if an event is a false flag or not?
sure just like many of you, I woke up this morning to the devastating news coming out of Las Vegas.
Shocking and painful tragedy, this time in Las Vegas.
Once again, people had gathered for music and fun, only to hear this. Instead.
It was somebody shooting a fully automatic.
People just started screaming and running.
These shootings are just absolutely difficult, if not impossible, to defense against.
Anytime you have a high-profile event that doesn't pass the sniff test, here are some red flags to look for that might denote a false flag event. First, you'll notice that it's such a high-profile event that it's all the mainstream media will talk about 24/7.
We're going to take a moment here, and we are going to kind of gather things and start off the top here at 1 o'clock with all the information that we know, because we know people are tuning in here and there, and they're turning on, and they haven't quite heard everything and everything that they need to know.
Creating a news bubble around the event as if it's the only thing going on in the entire world.
Aftermath in Vinnenden proved so compelling for the vulture-like rolling news stations, they even filled their time showing things that weren't happening yet.
This type of incessant coverage has not only been proven to encourage copycat acts by the reverse glorification of mass murderers, which is well known to the mainstream media.
This particular kind of media coverage of mass murder, I think there are three untoward effects. The first is copycat mass murderers.
Repeatedly showing us a killer's face isn't news, it's just rubbernecking. This sort of coverage only serves to turn this murdering little twat into a sort of nihilistic pin-up boy.
But the repetitive emotional arousal of 24/7 news coverage of mass murders is known to cause psychological trauma and damage to the people who consume it.
Terrorist event.
Terrorists.
Terrorist alert.
Terrorist threat.
Terrorist target.
Terrorism.
Terrorist attack. So many attacks.
You saw it here live. Oh.
At the very least, imparting a sense of learned helplessness in the viewers, which can further other aims.
And what it all comes down to is the process of desensitization. And I think the most important factor here is we've all been desensitized.
Number two, you know it's suspicious when the police and the mainstream media almost immediately present a neatly packaged, comprehensive narrative, and within 24 hours, it's case closed. You'll notice the media never questions the official narrative, even when there are obvious unanswered questions or blatantly conflicting eyewitness accounts. And even though the crime just happened, and it's perfectly obvious to anyone paying attention there hasn't been enough time to follow up on all the leads, you'll notice that any other theories that deviate from the official package narrative are denied airtime and discounted immediately, despite how compelling they are. Like, say, you probably never heard of the fact that the family of the San Bernardino shooters claimed they were framed for a false flag.
Where the couple was found, from what I understand, is that they were handcuffed, lying face down in this truck, shot up. There's a lot of things that just don't make sense.
Or the fact that many witnesses and even early media reports of the Oklahoma City bombing told of secondary explosive devices found in the Murrah Federal Building.
The second explosive was found and defused.
I think he said another bomb.
Justice Department is reporting that a second explosive device has been found.
They then found a third device, which was also larger than the first.
Reports which were all discounted later in lieu of the official story. The media will also frequently discount stories of multiple shooters, or in the case of Oklahoma City, multiple bombers, sometimes correcting witnesses on air, or even cutting them off.
How much shooting was going on and them not being taken down, and like I said, there is definitely someone on the ground.
Did you have any friends at this concert? Is there anyone that you don't know?
Humanly possible way that guy, that was the only shooter. If you were where we were and how we were hidden and the way they came in and herded us all out into the staff parking lot and then continued shooting into the staff parking lot.
The Las Vegas Police Department is saying that they do believe that it is just one person at this point, but they believe that it came from the 32nd floor.
Only the way there was a lot of headshots. So the way a lot of people got headshots and it was, yeah, like the guy, right. Yeah,
we're gonna wind it right there.
Number three, you'll notice the suspects are usually either taken out or they commit suicide, making sure there's no one to prosecute and no trial, making it much easier to frame a patsy.
I'm just a patsy.
Number four, another red flag is that the suspects of these crimes usually have hardly any training, yet they're able to carry off grand attacks with amazing precision. It just doesn't make any sense. A good example of this would be supposed hijacker Hani Hanjour, who we were told flew a Boeing 757 into the Pentagon on 9/11 in a maneuver so tricky, some experienced commercial pilots say it's frankly impossible. This is despite the fact that multiple witnesses, including flight instructors who flew with Hondur just weeks prior to the attack, said the guy could barely control and land a single-engine Cessna 172. The FAA has still never explained how Hondur was even able to obtain a commercial pilot's license to begin with, as most every flight school and instructor he worked with has come out on the record to say that he was a terrible pilot.
They are known to have taken some flight lessons with small single-engine airplanes. None of them had ever flown a jet before in their life, let alone a large commercial airliner. Debunkers maintain that the terrorist had spent some time in flight simulators, and that the equipment they encountered in the Boeing cockpits on September 11 was similar to the simulators they had trained on. This is false. For example, the only simulator Hani Hondur is known to have ever trained in is the Boeing 737, an airplane designed in the 70s, with a totally different cockpit from the 757 he is alleged to have hijacked on September 11.
We're also supposed to just readily accept without question that many of these mass shooters are somehow able to fire upon large crowds, sometimes from great distances, wearing large amounts of military gear, without loss of speed and with expert accuracy, despite having no military or weapons training beforehand whatsoever. It just makes no sense. Number 5. Drills. Many times there are drills involving the exact scenario of the attack happening around the same time or even simultaneously as the attack goes down, which helps to ensure that the false flag itself will be able to be carried out without too much interruption, because a lot of people in the confusion will think it's just a drill. A long list of drills and war games were taking place on 9/11. And during the Aurora shooting, there was a government-sponsored anti-terror training drill, specifically regarding a massacre in a movie theater. Not only was a drill going on during the Boston Marathon bombing, but pictures taken directly afterwards show crisis actors walking through the bomb scene looking totally confused, like this woman who comes out of a shop down the street from the finish line seconds after the bomb goes off with her leg already wrapped up as if she's hurt, then walks through the bomb scene with a look of horror on her face like she's confused. A drill of the exact scenario was going down during the London 7/7 bombings as well.
Today we were running an exercise for a company, bearing in mind I'm now in the private sector, and we sat everybody down in the city, 1,000 people involved in the whole organization, but the crisis team, and the most peculiar thing was we based our scenario on the simultaneous attacks on the underground and mainline station. So we had to suddenly switch an exercise from fictional to real.
6. People in high places appear to have been forewarned about the event well before it happened. One of the earliest examples of this is Pearl Harbor, the event that officially got America into World War II.
This is a Life magazine from September 24th, 1945. For a long time, the official explanation of Pearl Harbor was that we were slugged without warning when we were innocently going about our business. Slugged we were. But there's no need to explain Japanese behavior. But to say that we were slugged without warning is a radical distortion of the truth. Roosevelt, the chief executive of the nation and the commander-in-chief of its army and navy, knew in advance that the Japanese were going to attack us. And it goes on further in the article to point this out, that they may not have known the precise location of the attack, but the Japanese code had been solved for some time, and they knew that they were launching an attack against us, and we were not preparing our Army and Navy and Air Force to withstand that attack. In fact, in many cases, what we were doing was even making sure that we could be attacked.
9/11's another good example. People were warned not to show up for work on what otherwise should have been an ordinary Tuesday, including World Trade Center complex leaseholder Larry Silverstein and his daughter, whose bodyguards, according to Luke Radowski of We Are Change, received a phone call warning them on the morning of 9/11 not to come to work either. Not only that, but how did this BBC reporter know that Building 7, which was never even hit by a plane, just by the way, was about to collapse into its footprint well before it did?
And it seems that this was not a result of a new attack. It was because the building had been weakened.
during this morning's attacks. We'll probably find out more now about that from our correspondent, Jane Stanley. Jane, what more can you tell us about the Salomon Brothers building and its collapse?
Well, only really what you already know. Details are very, very sketchy. There's almost a sense downtown in New York behind me, down by the World Trade Centers, of just an area completely closed off as the rescue workers try to do their job. As you can see behind me, the Trade Center appears to be still burning. We see these huge clouds of smoke and ash, and we know that behind that there's an empty piece of what was a very familiar New York skyline.
Number 7. The accused has ties to military intelligence or intelligence agencies, including the FBI and the CIA. As activist post Brandon Turbeville points out, a connection to any one of these organizations and institutions may go some length in explaining how the attack was coordinated, the motivation of the perpetrators, the actual involvement or not of the suspects, and who actually directed the operation. The Sarnave brothers, aka the Boston Marathon bombing patsies, had been on the FBI's radar long before the attack, but it also later came out they had deeper ties to a covert CIA initiative in Chechnya. Many of the supposed 9/11 hijackers were also connected to the FBI and CIA beforehand. Accused Orlando nightclub shooter Omar Mateen was not only working for a high-level government defense contractor, but he too had long been on the FBI's radar and had in fact been introduced to FBI informants when he was followed and had all his communications spied on by the agency for 10 months in 2013. Number 8 involves mysterious witness deaths. In the three-year period which followed the murders of JFK and Lee Harvey Oswald, 18 material witnesses died. 6 by gunfire, 3 in motor accidents, 2 by suicide, 3 from heart attacks, 1 from a cutthroat, 1 from a karate chop to the neck, and only 2 were deemed from natural causes. By the end of the 70s, however, those mysterious deaths of JFK witnesses or people linked to the case was closer to 100. A little over a month after the Boston Marathon bombing, Special Agents Christopher Lorick and Stephen Shaw, two members of the elite FBI counterterrorism unit that arrested Dokar Sarnave, died by falling a significant distance out of a helicopter that encountered unspecified difficulties 12 miles off the coast of Virginia Beach. Multiple friends of the Sarnave brothers, including Tamerlan's best friend Brendan Mess, were also murdered in the weeks following the bombing. SEAL Team 6, the U.S. Naval Special Warfare Development Group that were told took out Osama bin Laden in 2007 in a raid on his compound, despite the fact that bin Laden was reportedly a longtime CIA asset named Tim Osman, who had died in 2001 of a degenerative genetic disease known as Marfan syndrome that doesn't have a cure, with insiders claiming the U.S. government had just been waiting to wheel bin Laden's body out in whatever time would be most politically expedient, but that's another story for another time, so let's go back to SEAL Team 6. We're told that just a few months after the raid, more than 20 members of the elite team were reported to have died in a helicopter crash, which the Taliban officially took credit for, though many have said it was to get rid of witnesses to the raid.
The locals in the neighborhood say that the operation led by the United States military was a complete hoax.
Osama was never here.
Just over a year after the Oklahoma City bombing, OKC police officer Terry Yeakey, one of the first on the scene, died in what appeared to be a vicious murder that was somehow ruled a suicide. Supposedly this is how he killed himself. He's said to have slit his wrists and neck, which caused him to nearly bleed to death in his car, but then he miraculously was able to climb over a barbed wire fence and then walk over a mile through a nearby field, eventually shooting himself in the side of the head at an unusual angle, and no weapon was found at the scene where his body was.
He was brutally murdered a mile and a half from the front gate of the El Reno Penitentiary. From that moment that his body was found, we know that the crime scene was destroyed. There were spade shovels that were used to turn over the crime scene. Ballistics, any gunpowder residue, anything that had to do with his death was completely destroyed. It was corrupted.
Going along with number 8, number 9, the mysterious disappearance of evidence and the classification of evidence. There are so many examples of this, it's hard to even limit how many I'm going to use here, but remember when the press was given unprecedented access to the suspected San Bernardino shooter's apartment right after the shooting to rifle through everything and trample any evidence that might be there and completely contaminate what should have been an open crime scene? Or how about the fact that 6 months after the Sandy Hook shooting, the Connecticut House of Representatives passed an unprecedented legislation preventing the public release of crime scene photos and video evidence from the shooting, including any records that could, quote, reasonably be expected to constitute an unwarranted invasion of the privacy of the victim or the victim's surviving family members, end quote. A few months after that, construction crews completely demolished the former Sandy Hook Elementary School. Or how about, despite being one of the most heavily filmed buildings on the planet, there has never been a release of any footage ever showing a plane hitting the Pentagon on 9/11. Just after the attack there, I remember clearly seeing clips on television of a line of people walking across the Pentagon lawn, picking things up with their bare hands. Which not only goes against any real crime scene investigation protocol, but is something that doesn't even happen in crime scene protocol on television shows which aren't real, let alone at one of the most infamous crime scenes of one of the biggest crimes of the 21st century.
It appeared that that Boeing 757, the American jet, American Airlines jet, landed short of the Pentagon. Can you give us any better idea of how much of the plane actually impacted the building?
You know, it might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon. The only site is the actual side of the building that's crashed in, and as I said, the only pieces left that you can see are small enough that you could pick up in your hand. There are no large tail sections, wing sections, a fuselage, nothing like that anywhere around, which would indicate that the entire plane crashed into the side of the Pentagon and then caused the side to collapse. Now, even though if you look at the pictures of the Pentagon, you see that the floors have all collapsed. That didn't happen immediately. It wasn't until almost about 45 minutes later.
In the immediate aftermath, the World Trade Center debris piles were locked down, and 50,000 tons of mangled steel from the Twin Towers were sold at a discount of just $120 a ton and shipped to China, where they were quickly recycled. By September 29th, not even a month later, 130,000 tons of debris had already been removed from the site. Fire experts later told Congress that about 80% of the steel was scrapped without being examined because investigators didn't have the authority to preserve the wreckage. Or how about the fact in 2010 a judge held that CIA documents associated with the Oklahoma City bombing case would remain classified 15 years after the fact? Or the fact that they just keep pushing back the release date of some 6,000 JFK assassination documents, which supposedly will finally be released in 2028, but since they push it back every single time, we're not holding our breath. And finally, number 10, qui bono, who benefits? Always ask who benefits. First, ask whether or not the official narrative has any obvious political advantages to the government. The ISIS and lone wolf terror narratives are at this point fear-based programming cues which urge the public to hand over more and more of their civil rights and freedoms while basically giving more power over to the government, while at the same time justifying more foreign intervention and empire-building wars. While they push emotional buttons, these narratives usually also push patriotic ones as well, which is another pro-government plus. Also, check if there was any pre-planned legislation that fits the event like a glove, and if that was already in the works. A good example is the way that 9/11 was used as justification to implement the Orwellian-named Constitution-Burning Patriot Act, which had been written well before 9/11. Another benefit to many involved, 9/11 was also used to start an offensive, nebulous, and never-ending war on terror, which began in Iraq, a country that President Bush himself later admitted on record he had a really tough time connecting to bin Laden or the so-called war on terror.
You know, one of the hardest parts of my job is to connect Iraq to the war on terror.
Although sometimes the benefit is as simple as flipping the script away from something the public at large was focused on that the establishment would like to make go away, and fast. Finally, look for financial beneficiaries, which include but are not limited to major banks, corporations, and defense contractors, as is the case in the underwear bomber Chertoff Group rapiscan controversy. Or the fact that Larry Silverstein had taken out a 99-year lease on the World Trade Center complex just 6 weeks before 9/11 and attempted to argue in court that the two planes hitting the towers constituted two separate terrorist attacks so that he could receive double the insurance payout. The list goes on and on and on here, way beyond the few examples of the many out there. But hey, at least this is a good place to start.
No, it's a funny thing how certain things turn out to be fact in history books. Our government will lie and that lie will become a fact.
So if you haven't looked into the Oklahoma City bombings, 9/11, Orlando, San Bernardino, the Boston Marathon bombing, the Mandalay Bay, and many of the others that I've left out, you really owe it to yourself to do so. The evidence might really surprise you. We, the citizens, can't stop these attacks if we don't know who's behind them. Please do your research and spread the word. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.